Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. Today we're joined by Carolyn from Canada, who takes LDN for MCAS. Thank you for joining us today, Caroline.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Could you tell us when you first noticed there was something wrong with you?
I had probably MCAS since I was born. So there were different things that were wrong with me my whole life. I got different diagnoses, very often of chronic disease, but that would vanish and for no reason. And these were not diseases that were supposed to vanish. But it's in the fall of 2018, in the late summer, early fall of 2018, that things went really wrong. I started being significantly sicker. And by January 2019, at that point, I was completely disabled. And I could not function. I could not work. I went on disability at that point. So I guess you would like to know about the symptoms that I had, right?
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay. So for people who may not be familiar with MCAS, MCAS is basically inflammation across the body, and it's a blend of acute and chronic symptoms. I started having more and more acute symptoms. You will know that with MCAS, each patient, you can have 100 patients, and you'll have 100 different descriptions of the symptoms, but we still have the same problem, that is dysfunctional mast cells. It depends of the systems or the organs that are being affected. In my case, it's neuropsychiatric. So it's basically the central nervous system is the worst. But I have problem with pain in the muscles also, pain in the bones, pain in the teeth, gut issues, bladder issues. There's a different things. But what was the most distressing is neuropsychiatric, because there was severe depression, severe anxiety, panic attacks, paralysis, aphasia, night terrors, name it. I probably had about everything that you can imagine can happen to a human being at that level.
So how long did it take you to find a doctor to listen to you?
So that was very difficult because the people I spoke to, they did not know what I have. In the best case scenario, I would meet different, I've met I don't know how many specialists. And then in the best case scenario, they would say, I don't know what you have. And the worst cases was that I was asked if I was faking. I was asked if I was pretending to be sick. And I was told numerous times that it was in my head, that I should see a psychiatrist, that there was no disease that fitted what I was describing. So that didn't make sense to me, because I knew that I was very sick. The chance that I had was that I'm trained as a researcher. So I put myself for about a year and a half in the medical literature, textbook, medical textbooks, peer-reviewed journals. And I finally found what I had. But it took a long time. As I said, we're talking 12, 18 months. So I went back to different specialists with my articles, my textbooks, and say, this is what I have. They say, no. And why did they say no to me? Why did they not want to help me? I don't know. We should ask these people. We know that there is, unfortunately, in Western medicine, a bias against women's and disease that affects women's. Is it the unwillingness to listen to a patient that the physician knows better? I don't know what happened. So what I had to do was to refer myself in the U.S., and I'm living in Canada. And you may know that in Canada, it's public-funded healthcare. So as a Canadian, I was not set up financially to go to another country, but I had to. So I refer myself to Dr. Lawrence Afrin, which is not that far from where I live because he is in New York State. And so he listened to me, and he tested me, and I tested positive for the disease that I believe that I had, that was MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome. So with the positive results, I went back to Canada, but people had basically never heard of that disease, the people that I was working with. So they did not want to treat me. So I took a very long time to find a GP, or what we call in Canada, a general practitioner, who finally referred me in environmental medicine. And that was only a year ago. That was in April or May of 2023 that I saw someone in environmental medicine who knew about MCAS and finally referred me to another of her colleagues in environmental medicine, and they started treating me. And the first thing they gave to me was LDN. I had other medications that were given to me to manage flares before Benadryl, basically, and Ativan. But this is what it does. It manages flares. It does nothing for your baseline. But LDN was, for me, a game changer. It is the first time taking LDN that was the first time that I was really getting hope that at one point I may get a normal life again, be able to work, to function, to go outside and do whatever I want to do in my life. I'm still in the process of increasing the dosage. I started LDN in August 23, and I'm still in the process of increasing the dose. But at this point, this is it's surprising, and the benefits that I'm getting of it, it's really great. I'm very happy with that.
Okay. So when you first started LDN, did you notice any introductory side effects?
Yes. I was very tired. And, I have the same pattern. I increase my dose every other week, every 2 or 3 weeks. Now it's every 2 weeks. And at first, I was very tired, and I got, sicker for the first week. But after that, it gets better. And it's still the pattern that I have now, is that I get a little bit sicker. But as I'm increasing the dose, the percentage of increase is smaller than at the beginning. So the side effects that I get for a few days are smaller. But, that's about it. I feel tired. I feel sicker. I've just a general feeling of not doing well, but it passes. And as I said, as I increase, I'm increasing the dosage, I feel it less and less.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you describe a typical day of your health from when you got up to when you went to bed before you were diagnosed?
Oh, a typical day. The depression were very, very deep. It's very difficult to describe the sense of doom and desperation. And it took me a while to realize that, because with MCAS, what we do is that the mast cells will release mediators in an inappropriate or dysfunctional way when we encounter a trigger. But at first, you don't know why. You don't know why you have aphasia, that you cannot talk for 3 hours, or your body is paralyzed, or that you start vomiting when you pass someone on the street. You don't understand why. So it took a while to understand that these are all triggers. So basically, my life between the fall of 2018 and, let's say, about a year ago, something like that, it's basically avoiding triggers. So you don't sleep well because it's notorious that we flare a lot during the night. So we don't sleep well. I had night terrors on a regular basis with that. And night terrors, for those who are not familiar with that, it's not like your regular nightmare. It's you're so much into it. I had someone to wake me up. And when you wake up, you're still in that terror that stays with you. So anyway, you don't sleep well. And once you figure out that you're reacting to food, so you have to start avoiding that. In my case, is I react very, very strongly to salicylates. That is basically a component of the immune system of plants. So I had to learn about that. I react to gluten. I react to dairy. I react to histamine that is also in food. So you have to, it's very complicated to eat because there are so many things that you cannot eat. So a good part of my day has been organizing what am I going to eat and when. I also had to eliminate all the smells that you can find in an apartment or in a house because the smells can trigger vomiting. And we're not talking about bad smells. It's just, I remember the first time that I vomited at a smell, I was working with garlic chive. I was preparing a meal. And the smell of that introduced vomiting. I would vomit also at the smell of chicken, the smell of garbage, different essential oils, perfume. So basically, I had to make a scent-free environment, install air purifier. One of the biggest things that we have with MCAS is basically is you have to control your environment as much as possible. And the best way that you have to do that is to stay at home. So basically you have no life. And even by doing that, you're still sick. It's not like, okay, if I avoid eating dairy, I won't have cramps in my stomach. So no, even if I avoid that, I'm still sick because the baseline is very high, the baseline of symptoms. It came to a point where just seeing photos or images of my triggers will trigger the symptoms, and that's another part. The limbic system at one point started making associations, and I had to do limbic, and I'm still doing limbic retraining to break the associations that the brain has made over time that were at first just based on my physiology, but with time, unfortunately, it's that. So, yeah, with MCAS, you don't have much of a life because you prevent that. And, of course, you remove the triggers. It's better. You do some limbic retraining. So, okay, you break patterns. But it's with LDN that I've been able to introduce some gluten. My tolerance of smell now is astonishing because now I can now go walk in the department store, in the beauty product, the perfume section, walking there without any symptoms. So this is remarkable. What? So I'm not there yet because I'm still on a very low dose. I, at this point, I'm taking 0.09 milligrams of LDN in the morning and 0.07 at night. So I'm not even at 0.1 at the moment. Yes, if we combine, but at once. So even at a very, very low level, I had amazing results with that.
Well, that's amazing. What would be your advice to other people who, some of them have had similar symptoms for 20, 30 years, where, like you were saying, nobody believes them, they think it's all in their mind. What advice would you give people?
Well, I'm glad you're asking that question. I think it's really important. If you believe that you're sick, that there's something wrong with you, as odd as it can sound, especially when it comes to neuropsychiatric symptoms. Okay, we're used to, for example, my gut, I have stomach cramps if I eat something that I don't agree with, that's fine. But in my case, I could really see a very clear association by eating salicylates or fruits, vegetables, food that is high in salicylates and depression. And people have never heard of that. But there will be someone will listen to you. It takes a lot of time to find the real doctor, but my thing is, don't let people convince you, healthcare professionals, whatever, physicians, psychologists, or other workers, don't let them convince you that it's in your head or that you're not sick or that it's because of a trauma or whatever theory they may have. There may be a physiological or a genetic base to what you're having. You have to do your own research, and this is can be very difficult to do that. If you're not familiar, maybe you can ask the help of someone, because it is possible now to, for example, public libraries to have access to peer-reviewed medical journals. Maybe a bit difficult at first if you're not familiar with the process, but you have to do your own research, and you have to find the person, the physician, that can help you. And it asks also, it's the sad reality, especially if you come like me from a country where it's public health, the public system, the healthcare system is publicly funded, is that you have to take your own money. For me, it was very difficult. I don't think that I will ever be a homeowner, because I had to take my savings to get treated in the United States, and I had no coverage. As I said, I'm a Canadian. I'm not set up to pay for my health care, or at least most of it. So be ready to make some sacrifices, unfortunately, but it's the price sometimes that we have to pay to remain healthy.
Exactly. Well, it's been amazing hearing your story, and thank you so much for sharing it with us today.
Oh, I'm glad that I had the opportunity when I heard about that, and because my experience with LDN has been so amazing, I was so glad that I had the opportunity to talk to the LDN Trust to talk about my opportunity and the progress that I'm making with it. I'm very happy that I was able to share my story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Leonard Weinstock, a guy who's been prescribing LDN since 2005, and I've seen the wonders, and I keep on seeing them, especially in hard-to-diagnose conditions. They're not that hard to do, but once you know about mast cell activation syndrome, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, you'll find that 17% of your friends or relatives have one or more of these conditions, and you can help them. We're making a documentary to wake up the medical community, to educate the population, but we need funding. So please, fund whatever you can afford, no matter how little, www.mcasfund.com. That's mcasfund.com.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.